Okay. I'm actually talking on something a little different than you when you introduced it. I'm talking about prevention. We're looking at prevention of homelessness, and my colleague on this is Mr. Blake Barrett here. And what we wanted to do in this paper, and this has been a part of our work, we are working with Dr. Casey and Dr. Schenka and others on the National Center that Roger mentioned earlier on homelessness among veterans. And we really wanted to look at the newest focus on prevention, and we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. What are some of the general risk factors, of course, when you're looking at prevention, comparing them for veterans and non-veterans. I'm going to look a little at the special case of homeless women veterans, and then some of the different initiatives and where we go from here. The purpose of this, with the economy and the housing crisis, what we saw from the current administration was that they really wanted to respond with some legislation designed to prevent or cut short homelessness among some of these new populations, folks that their houses were going into foreclosure, they were losing jobs, folks that we don't usually consider a part of the homeless. So we wanted to prevent a whole new generation of homeless at the national level. Within the VA, the secretary, as Roger has mentioned, was really committed to ending homelessness. And at the same time, there was this push to not have this the returning veterans become homeless, because this was such a considered such a national outrage. It's considered really shameful for these folks to have had multiple deployments and then to come home and be homeless. And of course that interacts with the current economy and housing crisis. So because of all these sort of national scene, there's really been a push to look at prevention. So what Blake and I and others did was we decided to look at the literature and see how research informs us to what are going to be some of the best ways to prevent homelessness. And this is this concept, we're calling it strategic prevention. And really, Dennis Culhane and Steve Metro, I think, have really expressed this the best. And the idea is that in an ideal society, everybody would be housed, everybody would be fed, everyone would have a job if they choose to, or some meaningful daily activity, and there would be no homelessness. So true prevention would be the creation of an ideal society. We do not live in an ideal society, so from a public health and a public policy perspective, what we want to do is strategically address the resources that we have to those that are most at risk of becoming homeless. So part of what Blake and I were trying to do is identify what are some of the risk factors, how does that differ between veterans and non-veterans, and then what are the implications of that? And I think that summary, the successful prevention efforts depend on targeted, effective use of resources, really sums up kind of our impetus behind this. So as you all know, the sort of general national in the United States, the general individual risk factors for homelessness are having an income less than 50% of the poverty level, the presence of mental health, substance use, and chronic physical health problems. We've kind of lumped these all together here, but I really want to emphasize the role of substance use disorders in homeless, because as we look at all the different risk factors, substance use is very pervasive, and it becomes comorbid with the mental health problems and the physical health problems. So if you have those other two and you add the substance abuse, it makes it that much worse. It can be a primary factor in terms of, for example, losing a job because of substance use, so that you actually, it'll affect your economics and that kind of a thing. So even though we've kind of got it lumped up in our perspective and our review of the research, we really see substance use as having a huger impact. Huger, is that a good word? The history of incarceration is also something that we're really coming to learn is such a vulnerability for homelessness. It affects folks in so many at so many different levels. Once they become incarcerated, once they become involved with the criminal justice system, it affects their ability to get jobs. It affects their abilities to find housing, to be eligible for housing. It affects their credit ratings. Of course, it affects their social support systems. So that's also a very important risk factor. And we also see the presence of adverse childhood experiences, including physical and sexual abuse. And another factor that comes up over and over again, and Ellen Bassick's work has been important in showing this, is that if you were homeless as a child, or if you had a foster care or out-of-home placement as a child, it increases your risk of becoming homeless as an adult. So those are just kind of, in general, non-veteran risk factors, or veteran or non. What we found and is that for veterans, a greater proportion of homeless persons are veterans than are a portion of the population in general. This risk of homelessness, and John alluded to this a little bit, really differs depending on which age cohort you're looking at. And again, we're looking a lot at Bob Rosenheck's research and Greenberg's research. But for example, if you look at the Vietnam era veterans, they're at slightly greater risk than non-veterans for homelessness. But if you look at that post-Vietnam all-volunteer force, so those are folks that served between 73 and 80, they're at a 4 times greater risk than non-veterans. And what we're seeing, and this is all preliminary now, but there's there does seem to be an increased risk factor for homelessness amongst the post-9/11 veterans. And it's all, as Roger was saying, it's still preliminary. We're not sure about how that's working. But the biggest increased risk is for those, the all-volunteer force, and the beginning of that. And that's kind of, it makes sense in the sense that for many of the folks, the men and women that enlisted as volunteers, the military was almost an employment of last resort. So they came into the military with some of those risk factors that we talked about earlier. They were coming from poorer backgrounds, they had less job skills, they had bigger histories of adverse childhood experiences, they may have come in with more mental health and substance use problems. So it makes sense that that particular population, then once they were discharged, were at higher, greater risk of homelessness. We're just now learning a little bit about the post-9/11 folks. They do seem to be at greater risk of some of the behavioral health and criminal justice issues associated with homelessness. Because of things like the higher rates of traumatic brain injury, higher rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, there's definitely higher rates of military or reported military sexual assault, especially amongst the women veterans, and because of the extended and repeated deployments. So if you add those increased risk factors with what the economy looks like now and what the housing market looks like, it really suggests that they're becoming homeless sooner after deployment than other veterans. I got 3 minutes? Okay, faster. Thank you. And some of this is surprising, and I know I'm always trying to tease it out, and we don't really know the answers, but in general, veteran cohorts, when you compare them to the non-veterans, have similar or higher levels of education, employment, income. They also have access to special benefits, the home loan guarantees, pensions, disability payments, education assistance, medical services, including behavioral health treatment. Not food stamps, so I think you made a good point. As you know, single adult males, it's very, very difficult to get food stamps or food support. But despite those extra protective factors, it does seem like the reason that there is a little bit of a higher rates in general for veterans is because the higher rates of these other issues and the mental health disorders, the substance use disorders, those two things co-occurring. And then the other kinds of associated behavioral health issues, like criminal justice involvement and disrupted support systems. Women veterans are three to four times more likely to become homeless than non-veteran women, so it's even higher here. And if you think about it, if you look at the risk factor, for example, of post-traumatic stress disorder, and you combine that with the higher rates for women to have experienced that as a result of childhood experiences, then you add on to it their higher rates as veterans with a military experience or a military sexual assault, it makes sense that they are a very vulnerable population for being homeless. It's also riskier for women if they're unemployed and if they become disabled. Another risk factor for homelessness among women veterans is having worse overall health and screening positive for PTSD. Protective factors, this is Donna Washington's work, is being a college graduate or being married. So really, if you look at overall, the risk factors are the same. If you look at veterans and non-veterans for sharing similar risk factors, but what we're seeing and what we really became aware of is different systems for preventing homelessness and responding to homelessness. And since I'm out of time, I'm not going to go through all of the efforts because I want to spend just a minute. This is the national prevention efforts. This is the Department of Veterans Affairs prevention efforts. You have the call center, the Healthcare for Reentry Veterans, Veteran Justice Outreach, and Supportive Services for Veterans Families. What it seems to me, this really is emphasizing, and this has come up and I've seen it as a bit of a theme in some of the other presenters, is the need for communities and the VA to begin to work out how they are going to work together. You cannot do prevention for veterans without involving the community. The VA does this. I mean, they do it with their grant per diem programs. The new SSVF program requires a new level of cooperation with communities, but we're running into a lot of barriers. And from the community side, this is the identification of veterans. They're not always identified in the criminal justice system. If you look at the homeless management information system, it does identify people as veterans. When John was talking about trying to find out where all veterans are receiving services, in part that's because our databases don't identify them as veterans. From the VA side, I think it's really all about information flow. And it's also, then if you look at the two of them as a systems issue, and this I think was really highlighted by what Scott and Lisa were talking about in terms of disaster, it really makes a difference that things are organized at different levels. At the VA, it's organized by medical centers, and then by VISNs, and then nationally. Locally, homeless efforts are around your coalitions, or your continuity of care organizations, and counties, and then states, so that as they develop their plans and the VA develops their plans, so I think the disaster planning was a great example of that. There needs to begin to be more of a flow of information and cooperation, and then I think it's going to get to the level of really everybody working together on this if we're going to prevent. Whew. I only sprayed a little.
We're about out of time, but I want to make sure that if you have any questions, especially for Colleen, I think, Colleen, you need to take off quickly, but we'll stick around if this room's not being used, if you have any individual questions. But let's see if there's any questions for Dr. Clark first.
Yes.
I presume you're defining veterans how the VA defines it, meaning getting the discharge.
A more than honorable discharge, yeah.
Yeah, more than honorable discharge.
Yeah. Or not a less than honorable, I'll put it that way.
What about the risk factors of the veterans who are a major portion who did not get the less than? That's what the three classifications.
Right.
They're falling through the cracks, if you ask me, from the VA. I'm a veteran, I'm a safety veteran from Vietnam.
Right.
And my brothers who didn't get an honorable discharge are falling through the cracks. More so when you list the risk factors. I've never seen a risk factor for them. People who served in the service and
right.
DOD is not taking any responsibility for what happened to them.
We actually crafted the Grant Grenier program in 94 to accept veterans that had also less than honorable. The only thing we couldn't do was accept dishonorable. But the Grant Grenier program was crafted because we knew veterans on the streets may be more likely to have less likely to have the honorable discharge. We actually crafted the legislation so that we could accept all those veterans, whether they're eligible for health care, whether they had an honorable discharge, or other than honorable, everything down to a dishonorable discharge. So the data that John is presenting, and Lisa and Scott are presenting, are mostly from the Grant Grenier program, which includes that bigger universe. But if you go to the VA hospital, it's eligibility for care, like John was saying, and there's a whole book to say whether you're eligible or not.
Right.
But the efforts of the National Center, as we create this national registry, will include all those veterans, whether it's dishonorable or not. Just some of those dishonorable veterans, some of those veterans that are dishonorably discharged may not be eligible for all the services, but there's a huge effort now to make sure that VA reaches every veteran. I've been in the VA for 20 years, and it's really lightened up a lot. You know, 10 years ago, it was actually an interesting story. I was working with a veteran on the streets. He was not eligible for VA health care. I brought his case to the medical center saying, look, I need this guy to see a doctor. You know what the eligibility clerk said to me? He said, he's not eligible for care. It's illegal for you to be working with that guy.
Illegal.
Yep. It's illegal for you to be working with a human being. But there's been a system change, which bring up a great point.
Yeah.
The last 10 years, the system has moved and shifted, but it's still a concern.
I saw the same thing being a veteran and seeing people who weren't classified as veterans being the same injury.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what? Another big issue too is sometimes when veterans access a community agency, we are encouraging community agencies to ask if you're a veteran. Sometimes veterans don't know that they're veterans, or if they're dishonorably discharged, they won't admit, especially the female veterans. They think, well, I have to be a male to be a veteran. So we reconstructed that that question, or future, I say, I gave a certain.
In the armed forces, right. And it's also a huge issue in the criminal justice system because people may not want to self-identify as a veteran because you can lose benefits. And yeah.
If you're incarcerated, you lose your benefits for a certain amount of time. So sometimes veterans can self-identify as
right.
If they think that's going to keep their benefits checks going to the bank.
Uh-huh.
It usually doesn't because of
the right.
About 10 years ago, actually, I read data from the Naval Health Research Center that was already 10 or 15 years ago, and looked at saying that the rate of self-reported sexual abuse of women recruits was on the order of about 25-30%.
Yeah.
And among males, it was about 10-15%.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you have any newer data, and because it was actually not that remarkably off compared
from
to
the community,
sexual,
right. No, I don't have newer information about recruits. What we do know, what we are finding, is that the women veterans exposed to the same experiences. Oh, let me back this up. People that have a history of childhood sexual abuse, when they are exposed to the same experiences as other people in the military, develop PTSD at much greater rates. And so, I think that we're just, in general, as a society, much more aware of all of those issues, and now we're becoming aware of the cost of it and the rates of military sexual trauma for women reporting in different VA clinics is huge. It's something like, I mean, one of the, on the, Roger and I just did a DVD on women veterans, homeless women veterans, and it was like 90% of them were reporting some type of military sexual trauma. So,
it's a difficult number to get at because it's
right.
On the safety, how it's reported, who's asking.
Right.
We're over time. We're more than happy to stay here. I wanted to give people permission to leave and not feel guilty.
Does that include me?
Certainly, you're only going to answer questions if you'd like.